Yeah. And there's things that you can do as well with busyness, depending on how the husband's and the wife's day was. One of you might take the lead in helping do that bedtime stuff so that the other one can kind of prepare or clean up or kind of rest up so that you can have some time to devote to one another. What else besides you got young kids, what else can kind of get in the way of your schedule? Think about it.
Work, sports.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to have that bedtime if you're getting home at 10 o'clock from a game, right? Mm-hmm. Your job, yeah, if you're coming home exhausted and working lots of hours, 12-hour shift. So any advice there? What do you think? What can you do as far as your sports or your work?
Prioritize.
Yeah, yep. You got to think about, I know that when Carissa and I, we got five of our own, and some of them did different sports and rec sports and club sports. But whenever we made that commitment at the beginning, there's a lot of that scheduling is one of the, probably the biggest cost, more than the money, is the time cost. Mm-hmm. What is this going to cost our family? And prioritizing, is that worth it? Is that time on the road? Is that time away from home? Is that are those, if you're going to be late nights, weekends, right? Are those time, is it worth it for our family, the investment? Are we going to miss church? Are we going to miss a venture club, Bible study? Are we going to be tired the next day? There's a tremendous cost to that opportunity. So when you think about what you can gain, you have to think about that as well. What about work? Do you have any flexibility there? Can you make adjustments if you're working long hours? Or how would you adjust if you're in a situation where one of you is just really working a lot of hard hours?
If it's not just, like, there's seasons of times, but if it's not a season and it's just the way things are, then probably you seriously consider doing something different.
Yeah, finding a different job if you can.
Yeah.
Scaling back, mm-hmm. And that's that can be a tough balance, especially if you're trying to balance providing for your family and versus being there for your family, right? And that's a common one. I think communication would be key there, right? As far as parenting goes, and as well as your spouse, it can be difficult when you have to choose from, am I going to earn enough to pay all the bills this week, or am I going to be home to be with my wife? Spend time together in the evenings. Any other thoughts or wisdom about managing your work schedule?
Well, just the choice of job can impact that. Like if you're gone every other week or something like that, mm-hmm. It would be hard.
Yeah, yeah. And many jobs, they sometimes have options in the sense of you can work this and then you could possibly do this in addition to that, or this in addition. So sometimes people may have an opportunity, like in my example, I'm a public school teacher, and I can optionally choose to coach a team in the spring or in the fall, or I can work extra duty, or like a lot of people have overtime options. And so if you do have those options, again, that's something to consider. Is the benefit of the income going to be worth the time that you're going to be away? And there may be seasons where, okay, we really need to save up, or we need to pay off this debt, where maybe you do that, but try not to sacrifice that. Judy?
I don't know how many jobs are out there anymore that do the flex time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had a job once that had flex time, and I really liked it because you could kind of set your hours within like a 2-hour.
Mm-hmm.
Going in the morning and getting off in the evening, if you need it off earlier in the afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do think there's something to realize that, like we talked about seasons, where maybe there's times where you're working and you get a small amount of time with your spouse, and other times where you get more time. It doesn't mean that you can only have sexual intimacy on those times when you have a lot of time. Sometimes you just have to adjust and say, we're just going to use the time that we have, and be maintaining that relationship regularly, even if there's not as much time there as you would like to have. You're still going to engage in that to maintain the relationship.
Yeah, I would say Beck and I have found that both of us can't be extremely busy at the same time.
Both of you can't?
can't be busy at the same time. So if I'm going through a really, really busy stretch, Becky works hard to be less busy.
Mm-hmm.
So that maybe, you know, more things are done.
Mm-hmm.
When I come home, I could just be home.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not much expected out of me then.
Yeah.
When she's really, really busy,
mm-hmm.
I try to be less busy
mm-hmm.
and maybe do more things and take on more
mm-hmm.
responsibilities at home.
Right.
So that when she's home, she doesn't have like five other things she has to do. I try to work that out. So I think if you, just in general, if you're both sensitive to each other's busyness
mm-hmm.
to the best of your ability.
Right.
But if you know you're going to walk through like Ironman week, it's a very busy week for me. So Becky just knows that
mm-hmm.
and make sure she doesn't have things planned then.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I know a woo is kind of building up, I try to
mm-hmm.
make sure everything's, you know, I do try to do more that week.
Yeah.
And that way we still have time for each other.
Yeah. That's good. There can be times where one can be more busy, but it's very hard to maintain if you're both extremely committed and not kind of scheduling planning. And there's some wisdom in that in terms of sometimes you get into that situation where you didn't really realize that's what was happening. And so as your marriage grows, you learn to plan and schedule and be more selective with your job, the hours that you're working, the sports you choose. Tim.
I was going to say, I think for some, like, it's not that work makes us too busy, straps us for time as much as it is, like, there's stress at work that just kind of kills the desire
mm-hmm.
for intimacy. Because, like, a lot of us work jobs where we get off at 5 or 6,
mm-hmm.
and, like, technically we have time,
mm-hmm.
but there, maybe we bring our work home with us, or we're not managing this stress we have at work well, and it's affecting our desire for intimacy. And so I think some of this is not just a time issue, but how we're managing the responsibilities we have and the effect that maybe our mismanagement is having on
mm-hmm.
our desire for intimacy.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It occupies your time and can get in the way, but also it can occupy your mind, right? And add that stress to where you're thinking about, right, how do I manage the business? How do I make sure Johnny's getting enough reps in his sports team? You know, like, there's all those things that are in the way. And so that even when you do have time, your mind is elsewhere, or your energies are all depleted. And so there's a kind of a double toll there where kind of learning to set boundaries in all of those areas and say, I'm going to save time and energy. Because, like, the intimacy, like we talked about last time, it's really an extension and it's built out of the relationship. And so not only do we need, you know, time for intimacy, we need time and energy to be relating to our spouse. And if those things are in the way, or, you know, if I get home and I'm only talking about work, or we're just talking about the game, and we're not investing in one another, it's going to get in the way. Yeah.
When we're saying do not deprive, I'm assuming we're meaning voluntarily, and like this does not include sickness and injury. Like this is voluntary deprivation.
Tell me, what do you mean what you're talking
like,
about?
Like it says do not deprive one another, and so this would be like a choice that the husband and wife are making together.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got around a sickness going through your house, or if you've got injury, like
mm-hmm.
this is not
mm-hmm.
voluntary. So how do you balance that when those things can take hold as well?
Yeah, I think that, okay, I think I'm in it. So like, let's say one of you is sick and maybe you're worried about, you know, getting the other person sick, or maybe that makes them physically very tired. That's kind of I would say that's again the mutual relationship in a sense. I think that you could talk about, you know, it's borders on like the idea of that sometimes we're just physically exhausted, right? And it's like, well, that's, you know, I need that time to rest and recover. And I think that'd be a place where, again, you're related to your spouse, you talk about it with your spouse, but the goal is that neither one of you is, you're never demanding of your spouse, on the, if you're seeking to have intimacy, but if you're the one that's being pursued, you're never depriving them. So as far as it's possible, whenever one, the husband or the wife, desires to have intimacy, you don't deprive them, is the goal. And so it's always, instead of about, can I obtain it from, right, it's just, should be focused as, can I give this to my spouse whenever it's possible?
Yeah.
And not just whenever they always initiate it, we talked about last time, sometimes initiating can be something that can be, if we have passivity, or neither one is really initiating it, sometimes we have to take that initiative where we go beyond just not depriving to pursuing and pursuing our spouse and initiating, because we know it's good for our marriage.
Yeah, and I'd say part of giving is not over demanding.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So knowing your spouse.
Yeah.
I remember. I was just gonna say, I remember we did our premarital counseling many years ago, 20 some years ago, and you do these little surveys and you talk about finances, and one of the questions our pastor was taking us through was, okay, how often do you expect to have sex in your marriage? And I think I put, well, probably every night. And Chris said, I remember you said that, and I was like, really? And so she, we always still laugh about that. I'm like, that was probably unrealistic. Thought, but at the time, clueless. What were you gonna add?
I was just gonna say, if like one person just, there's never agreement on that, like they fight it, no, we should never, like that's a probably an issue of mm-hmm. not loving, not caring, not being relational, not understanding.
Mm-hmm.
What
were you gonna add?
I was just gonna say, we talked about, you know, the older years of marriage,
mm-hmm.
and how physically that's going to play a part into how often it's happening, if it can happen.
Yeah.
And then you've got mothers who've just given birth, and
mm-hmm.
there's a time where
mm-hmm.
things are going to look very different.
Yeah, very much. Very much so. Like part E, that's changes in life. So let's look at that real quick. Ecclesiastes 12, right? He's kind of gone through life under the sun in Ecclesiastes and all these observations. The author, all these things that he observes about life. What is life on earth like? Okay, what is life under the sun like? And in chapter 12, he says, the grasshopper drags itself along, and desire fails, because man is going to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets, before the silver cord is snapped, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher is shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern, and the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns who gave it. Right? So, like you're talking about, we change over time as we age. We change. So what are some ways that you guys can guess if you're young, right? Or you can tell us if you've gone through. What are some ways that you might predict or anticipate that your marriage is going to change as you age? Having kids, right? So, yep, that changes your energy level. It changes your body physically, especially the mother.
When the kids move out.
When the kids move out, yes. Yes. Now, there used to be, I don't know if it's as common anymore, but when the kids move out, it's one of the most common times for divorce, right? It's a lot of times the relationship is focused on the kids, and they've neglected one another. And once the kids move out, it's a fairly common period in a married life. So that is a really key, crucial time to think about, that as you're preparing, and throughout your marriage, hopefully, you're still building and focused on one another, right? And as the kids move out, you're thinking about how you can relate and spend time together in new ways.
So I was thinking about Amy's question, and I think something good to think about is, you know, as you, let's say you have a prolonged illness or
mm-hmm.
something, you know, prolonged injury,
mm-hmm.
Just thinking about how you can adjust,
mm-hmm.
adjust the amount of energy that needs to be put out, you know, like there's
mm-hmm.
still ways to
mm-hmm.
be intimate with putting out less energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much.
But still figuring out how to make it.
Right.
Like both spouses need to figure out how to give and take and
mm-hmm.
love well
mm-hmm.
in the midst of that, and care for the other one while still.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a big part of that, like you said, is communicating. So if it is a longer term illness or if your body's being affected in certain ways, the more you talk about it and relate to one another, you're going to understand, this is what my spouse needs right now. Also, this is one way in which I can relate to them physically, intimately, that maybe that has changed from 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And that's new and it changes, but being in a constant relationship where you're figuring out how can we not just stop and say, oh, you know, we're different, so, right? Tan.
And I would say intimacy doesn't always mean intercourse.
Right.
Either.
Yeah.
So they're, like, sex is a circle, not a dot. Like, it doesn't just mean intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more things that can fit into that category. While there may be a season where physically intercourse is not possible or is extremely difficult, if you're in that kind of season,
Yeah, so why do you think, let's talk about some of the drawbacks. Let's say that you're going through a change or your spouse is going through physical changes, you're aging. Why would communication be so important? What are some maybe unintended things that could come about in your marriage if you're not really talking through those things?
Like if the other spouse doesn't know some of the things that are going on and all they perceive is just rejection, and whereas if they understood, there's more...
Right.
Opportunity, like, to be caring and understanding.
Yeah, if the desire or ability of one to kind of function in the same way is changing, how could the other spouse possibly interpret that?
They don't love you.
They don't love me anymore. They're not attracted to me. There's something's missing. It's something about me, right? They can become self-conscious. What have I done differently, right? Where am I failing? So they can... It can be, both of them can kind of become more and more self-conscious, more and more where they're separating out from one another instead of talking through what's going on and understanding each of their changes, their body changes. Okay, so that's a really important thing to consider, talking through those things. And just letting the other spouse know, this isn't because of you, I don't know what's, you know. And you may not even, as you're aging, you may not know what exactly to expect for yourself or for your spouse. And so that communication might be just talking about, I don't know what it's, you know, like to go through menopause, right? Or whatever that happens to be, right? So just, it's going to be first time you guys are going to talk through it. So other thoughts, aging concerns? Okay. All right, let's get to thought questions. Okay, throw out some numbers. How often should a couple have sex?
Yes.
Yes. That's a good answer. Right, that's a good answer. What would in your mind be like, this is probably too rare? I'm going to say once a year is too rare. Anybody want to go lower than that? Yeah,
start the bidding
at once a year.
I'll go once every 6 months.
Once every 6 months, probably still too rare. You see what I'm saying? Like, you want to talk to your spouse, but like, it will somewhat depend upon, you know, each person's physical, you know, desires and your stage of life, but fairly regularly. That should be, I don't know.
I'm going to regret asking this, but what is fairly regularly?
I would say, you know, more than once a week. I'll say, just Chris and I have talked throughout the years, and we were talking about, you know, how this is going, and okay, and it changed from when we were first married, when we had young kids, right? But yeah, because for us, we were both relatively healthy, and Carissa didn't have any complications with her pregnancies and those type of things. So, you know, the longest periods were like right after delivery and those type of things. And like Tanner was saying, there were still times where we just spent time together, you know, showing physical affection when you don't have to have intercourse. But I think that, you know, one of the things that you find, and I'll compare it a little bit to coming to church, and that the longer, every time you miss church, the longer you're gone, the easier it is to miss the next time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And the kind of the coal, once it's removed from the fireplace, it starts to cool, right? And so if you are not in a habit of regularly having physical intimacy, it may not seem like it's been a long time because you've grown accustomed to not engaging in that. You've kind of grown cold towards one another. And on the other hand, if you're regularly engaging in that, coming together physically, you kind of develop that pattern and that cycle in your marriage where you regularly kind of have this expectation. And she would joke that she kind of knows, you know, how often I'll, you know, initiate and that type of thing. But I would say, you know, my number would say, I would say, you know, more than once a week would be a great number to shoot for. If you're up and able and healthy.
Yeah, I think
when you're married. Yeah. When you're married. Of course.
Yeah, I think there's kind of two numbers. I think there's the ideal number.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the, if it's less than this, we're in trouble number.
Yeah, and it's like anywhere in,
yeah, so
we'd like
kind of
to have
range.
This many.
Yeah, multiply,
but
that's like
if
ideal.
We can, we're still okay.
But it needs to happen. I don't know, like in my experience, like with marriage counseling and stuff, is assuming everyone's healthy and everything, if it's happening less than once every 2 weeks,
that's dangerous.
Yeah, that's kind of
like
the
light.
That's the caution light.
Do you have a graph? You know, like as you get to 45 and 50 and 60.
Yeah, and that's where you have to look at health.
It's not possible, you know, you're aging and your testosterone and your estrogen and all that's going south. And
there is a lot of studies, though, that talk about when
say people in their healthy people in their 30s and younger.
Yeah.
You know, before there's...
Okay.
Yeah, healthy people in their 30s and younger, if it's less than once every 2 weeks, it's like...
And you can also... I like that you bring that up because I think there's also a sense in which... the culture wants to influence both husbands and wives that you have to maintain that youthfulness. And they sell, you know, hormone replacement and testosterone and estrogen. There's all these things that are sometimes pushed. And so that's something where being able to age and be the person that God has given you, the health that he's given you.
Yeah, and I've talked to people who, let's say they had their prostate taken out. And they still have times of like physical intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not sex, but it's clearly a time dedicated towards cuddling, snuggling, and just being close.
Yeah.
So, and that's just really healthy for a marriage because that's still like, this is something we don't do with anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the way we're intimate with each other. So, I would still probably hold to that. Yeah, whether it's just like, you know, before bed.
Yeah.
Just hugging and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you could say, I mean, when you...
Like, if you haven't kissed your wife in 2 weeks or something, like, you know what I'm saying? That's a problem.
Yeah, when you read that question, it doesn't, like Tanner was saying, it doesn't have to mean that it's always intercourse, but that you're having physical intimacy. And again, the more we age and as things change, then that can vary, you know, more widely as to what's going to happen on those. But you're regularly seeking to have that time together. Okay, let's talk about counseling. So Bob, he confesses to you he's not sexually attracted to his wife. And she's a lovely woman with great qualities, but he just doesn't find her sexy. Why do you think Bob might feel this way?
You have to ask more questions.
Yeah, you got to follow up.
Yeah,
what's going on with Bob?
Be wondering if he's got a regular habit of lust going on where he's thinking of other women.
Mm-hmm.
That's reestablishing his standard of beauty, changing it to where it's not his wife.
Yep. What does he find beautiful? What does he find sexy? If it's being perverted or warped by pornography.
Yeah, and that's not just porn. That's just how your wandering eyes and what you're thinking about.
Could be television, movies, books. Could be anything just in his thought life. Could be past history, right?
Well, and is this like the start of the marriage? Is this like further down?
Yeah, that's a good question. Where are they at in their marriage? Has it always been this way? Is this recent? Is it a recent thing? Flirtatious.
Yes, like there's just a little something that seems those kinds of things.
Should he share this with his wife?
No.
No. That's an easy one, guys.
Here's a question. What if the reason is like his wife not taking care of herself? If that's part of it.
That's
a tough
real.
One.
Yeah. I will say that one of the things that I think a husband can really encourage and bless his wife is by really praising all the positives,
yeah.
right? And building into her a confidence and a knowledge of all the things that you love about. So when she does take care of herself, you're really complimenting, praising
yeah.
how much you love, and it's you look so wonderful, and oh, I love how you did your hair this way, right? And because it can have a positive or negative effect, the words and the affection and the way that a husband speaks to his wife, and vice versa, but can really help them build their view of themselves.
Yeah.
Right? And so,
yeah, and give her a chance to get gussied up.
Yeah, like say, let's go out, we're going to go do something.
We're
going
to go to a
right?
nice dinner.
Yeah.
We're going to go see a show. We're going to go to a
yeah.
play, right?
Yeah.
And I can see this going the other way, too, where wives losing attraction for their husband because
mm-hmm.
they've turned into a slob.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know if this is a minor thing. It may be minor, but like making sure that she has you're providing for her that she can get clothes or
mm-hmm.
makeup or all the things that she wants to have to get, you know, dressed up, you know, do her nails or whatever. There's a certain sense, and maybe she's just trying to budget and won't spend any money on herself. Yeah.
And both, like, Dan said, you both need to
work. Yeah. Yeah, I'm at school. I see a lot of kids in their PJs and T-shirts. And I don't know if this is but one way to think of it is, again, that your physical appearance, right, is really an others-focused energy. You really don't look at yourself. And so the person that you put on, the way you dress and your hair, that's kind of a way of blessing other people, if you can, to try and, you know, get them the best version of yourself, especially for your spouse. Okay.
Well, I was going to say, the more you talk with your spouse, the more that open, because lots of times I will say if someone is starting to feel depressed,
mm-hmm.
legitimately, they will stop doing some things, even bathing. I mean,
yeah.
that can be,
mm-hmm.
I mean, a good clue that something much
mm-hmm.
bigger
mm-hmm.
is going on then.
Yeah.
That can
yep.
really affect other
it
things.
Definitely.
And they might not even realize it.
Yeah.
So
talking to them about trying to make sure you know what's going on. What were you going to say, Tanner?
Well, I had a question. How would you counsel somebody who has same-sex attraction
mm-hmm.
and they struggle? They might think that their wife is pretty, like, in more
mm-hmm.
of like an objective,
mm-hmm.
beautiful sense.
Yeah.
But maybe has struggles to feel the attraction
mm-hmm.
towards her.
Mm-hmm. I think part of it is, there's a sense in which you do want to investigate if there is any kind of underlying things that could have, you know, led to what has caused it and how's that come about. Some of that attraction, your brain can kind of get wired to be excited or attracted through certain things in the past. And so figuring out, is there anything that needs to be put off, that maybe there was a pattern of thinking or something that's kind of built in, that temptation to be attracted to the same sex. Kind of in the same way, if it's been pornography, if it's someone at work, that you've allowed your mind to kind of fixate on attracted to this certain thing. And putting on, right, just that focusing on scripturally, you know, that you're to be, that command that we see, let's flip back, you can see it. You know, partially I've counseled them. It's in the Proverbs, I believe. One of our favorite verses to
yes.
read aloud.
Delight in the wife of your youth.
Yeah, Proverbs 5,
15 to 19. Yep.
And so when we think about that, you know, drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad? Streams of water in the streets, let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breasts fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. And so partially I would just counsel them that if you delight in your wife, right, then you will grow to delight in her physically. And so delight in her relationally, delight in her love, delight in your relationship with her. And we're, you know, we see that command there, let her body, right? Everything about her body is what you should be delighting in. And so partially it's a think the right things first and pray, and over time your body and your desires will kind of follow along your emotions. That's how I'd probably counsel them. But it'd be good to probably have that, do some regular check-ins and keep up with them during that time. Let's say in Bob's case, Bob was quite promiscuous. So he asks the questions, and he finds, part of it is he finds her boring because he was in this, developed this excitement because of his promiscuous kind of, the forbidden water is sweet. So what would you tell him there?
There's anything in this life that's still feeding into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And part of it is like helping him see that it's not your wife that needs to change. Right?
Yeah.
If you're not finding her attractive, you want to make sure that, like here we were talking about, is there anything with her wife that she's with his wife that she's doing? But you know, as we probe here, no, it doesn't have anything to do with Bob's wife. This is with you, Bob, and there's nothing wrong with your wife.
You are the problem.
You are the problem, Bob.
Baby steps, Bob.
You are the man. No. Little David.
Nathan.
Okay, and we kind of talked a little bit, maybe similar counsel to Bob, that partly is that he may still be kind of harboring a delight in his past sin.
Yeah.
He's holding on to that, if I had treasured my iniquity in my heart type of thing. So he's still... And so part of it is even seeing his sin in light of the scriptures and understanding how wicked that was and how it wasn't a good thing, that was a damaging thing, that damaged me, it damaged the other women, it damaged my wife, it damaged our marriage. So seeing it in that right light may help him to remove his past pleasure.
Could that be also maybe why he's not really finding intimacy? Because he sees that as, so like let's just say this is the start of a marriage,
mm-hmm.
and he said like he was quite promiscuous in college, and so he finds out like, yeah, like obviously that was wrong, and so as he's going into marriage, he kind of finds that like he boring and stuff because he's like, oh well, this is wrong for so long, and I don't
mm-hmm.
want to go back to that. So
mm-hmm.
trying to change that of it's wrong to right is more of a mentality of changing that rather than that he's still feeding into that. Just more of like
mm-hmm.
he's got to change that mindset of it was bad, now it's good.
Well, yeah, I think you're getting at a different. I think in that case, sometimes there are spouses that can feel more reluctant, maybe guilt. There's different kind of emotions that come where if they have repented of that sin in the past, and now they're kind of still have that association that, okay, all of my past sexual experiences have been wrong. I just don't feel free and open and don't see the good aspect. That could be a different response, whereas... it could be that Bob is still delighting in, oh, that was a wonderful experience, and now I'm bored here because it's not sinful. So there's a rewiring of how to view the past that will help him view the present.
What's the difference between boredom and guilt?
Yeah, there's lots of different ways in which past sexual sin can work itself out and affect your marriage. It will affect your marriage. So for all of you guys, right, whether you're married or not, if you have had or are engaging in any premarital sex, it's going to impact your marriage. It's unavoidable. And so talking through, working through that, and applying the gospel is something that will have to happen tremendous in an acute moment, right, at the beginning of the marriage, and then over time it will have to be revisited. Because if there's anything that kind of brings that back to the surface, either an action or a memory or some kind of incident, it's going to re-answer you that pain and that feeling that this person wasn't only for me, that kind of the jealous spirit that wants someone only for themselves. Judy.
You keep saying guys.
Oh.
Well, the same thing can go to the women.
That's true. We, it's not just Bob.
It's Bob Ed.
There could be very much. Yeah.
Women always, if they end up with divorce, women always blame the men, but it's not always.
That's true.
The man.
That's true. That's a good point. We were picking on Bob pretty hard. It's true. It's true. Let's wrap. Okay, all right, we're getting close to the end here. We talked a little bit about three, right?
Yep.
Not in months. Okay, we know, we kind of know. What about question B? What would be the steps? Let's say that the coals have grown cold in a sense that there's not been intimacy for months. What would be some good maybe first steps if you're talking to a friend? He or she, they confide to you that we just haven't been intimate in a few months.
Rose petals and a heart on the bed.
Okay.
Something else to clean.
Ben says, that's just something else to clean up.
I mean, it's a start dating again.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of go back to that pursuing one another and building up the non-sexual intimacy to lead into.
Yeah, and it's very hard to picture a couple that's been they've been dating one another, they've been going out on spending time together in the evenings, talking about their date, right? It's almost impossible to have a very close, loving, united, intimate relationship without having physical intimacy there. Usually, this is caused by or related to a distance in their relationship in the first place. But anything else? What other advice? Yeah.
I don't know if this is a good biblical or counseling move, but right there in that 1 Corinthians 7:5, do not deprive one another.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was to ask myself, my wife, others, why am I wanting to deprive you?
Mm-hmm.
What are those reasons? What is going on that's causing me to deprive my spouse of being together?
Right.
Something going on.
Yeah, and if it's months, it could have started as maybe one depriving, but they both kind of maybe either given up or they both have some issue going on, right? So part of it might just be having an open, kind of frank conversation, saying it's been several months, you know, like is there some, what's going on? And maybe they're aware of it, there's something they just have not been dealing with, they need to talk about it. Anything else? Counsel? How should you give them a timeline? Okay, you get back together. Sometime within the next year, right? No, you need to be working towards that, right? Working towards
that. I mean, that is, to an extent, yeah. I mean, I think you should, like, have, once you have this conversation, realize, like, okay, we need to up some intimacy, we need to do some things, but, like, we got to close the door on this thing.
Yeah, and I think that question four kind of relates to that, right? Does it always have to be epic, right?
Yeah.
So expectations can sometimes be a hindrance, right? If they're thinking, okay, we've got to, right? It's been months, right? Just kind of saying, really the biblical expectation is that you're not depriving one another and that you're coming together. And like everything else is kind of, there's a lot of variety that can be from time to time, season to season, but
I think one thing, back to the what steps need to happen to reengage, I think that, let's say it is Bob, and not the wife.
Okay.
Him having accountability from another man and not the wife having to make sure that he's engaging. And,
definitely. It's real good argument for why everyone in the church has older men, older women that are mentoring, discipling, and there to walk through them, walk through these things with them.
I think, just maybe who we're speaking towards, a woman, a wife, just helping her understand God's good design of sex.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she just, whether it is from her own past or, I mean, this could be man or woman, but sometimes sex can just be seen as just a job, and just a duty in mm-hmm. a very work-based sense.
Yeah.
And I think helping her understand God's good design is actually a good, beautiful thing, and mm-hmm. not this work
yeah.
to do.
Yeah.
It's chore, yeah. That's what I mean. And it needs to be redeemed.
Yeah.
What sex actually
is. Yeah. Whatever you do, do it for the glory of God. That this is something that God created. It's a gift to husband and wife, and it is this way to glorify God in your marriage, is to love one another through that. I would encourage you, I'm not going to read them all off, but I went through our handout and found 20 different things that describe sex, and then kind of tried to list out the opposite of what you could put, what sex is and what it isn't. So example would be, it is exclusive, it's not adulterous. It is unifying, it's not isolating. It shows honor, not dishonor. So there's a lot of things, if you want to kind of think about what have we learned about sex, that we're to delight in our spouse, not to despise them. We're to be, you know, protective of them, protecting them from temptation, not leading them or tempting them to sin. So there's a lot that the scriptures have that give us guidance and direction. So the conclusion here, all right, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And the quest for sexual purity has to be rooted in a desire for intimacy with God. The Lord does not sit up in heaven trying to stop his creation from having fun, but intends his creation to fully enjoy the world he made on his terms. Sex is a gift from God. It's a beautiful expression of love between a husband and wife when celebrated within the parameters of Scripture. Yet when indulged in outside of God's prescribed way, Satan uses sex to enslave, ensnare, and exploit both believers and unbelievers alike. It's of utmost importance that we strive to be holy in this area in order to maintain strong marriages and families and our witness to the world and our intimacy with God. So, like I said, if questions come up and you're like, "That I don't know if I feel comfortable," right? Question asking that Sunday school class, it'd be great to talk to, you know, an older man or older woman, someone that you respect, a more mature believer, and just have a conversation. And I think there's many who would welcome those conversations and be happy to mm-hmm. share personally or from the scriptures to do that. So next week, we will get started on parenting, right? Parenting. Let's pray. Father, we thank you so much for what a good and gracious God you are, and what an amazing creator you are. We often marvel and we wonder at your creation when we look at the stars, when we look at this earth. Even in its cursed state, there's so much beauty. And when we look at our marriages, we see that you've given us the gift of sex and physical intimacy. And you've commanded us to in our marriages, not to deprive one another. That you've given us these purposes of procreation, of pleasure, of unification, of protection. And pray that we might love our spouses and we might glorify you by seeking to honor you and to honor our spouse. And engage in that physical intimacy in a way that will continually help us to grow closer to you and declare the glory of God and the goodness of the gospel in our marriage and to the world that's around us. Please protect us from this world which seeks to warp and corrupt and poison and destroy all that is good. Protect our marriages. Protect those of us who are not yet married. Protect them from temptation to sin. And help them to seek to glorify you in their bodies. We pray that you'd bless their study of marriage and that you'd help our marriages to grow strong and that they would become a place where people really visually see the gospel and through the way that husbands and wives love one another. We ask this in your name, Jesus. Amen.